The way things are going these days, it may seem like the church is losing ground to an advancing culture of paganism. It may appear like we're heading toward defeat. But in reality, the power of the gospel cannot be stopped, even by the gates of hell. Today, a reminder that those who name the name of Christ are on the winning side after all. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Dr. Lutzer keynotes a recent Moody Church missions conference by sounding a note of victory. Join us now as we hear him speak on the triumph of the gospel.
Today I speak to you briefly on the topic of the triumph of the gospel, the ultimate triumph of the gospel. Throughout 2,000 years of church history, the church has often advanced. It has remained faithful and true despite much opposition. When I mention that, we immediately think of the early centuries in Rome when Christians died and the Christian church grew. But at times the church has often been stymied and sometimes even stopped. Particularly, we think of the rise of Islam, which in some areas of the world has almost extinguished the church. Last Sunday, if you were here, you know that we had a lecture on Islam by a man incredibly knowledgeable, and he pointed out that one-third of all the world today is nominally Christian. Christian in name, at least. About one-fifth of the world, something like 22%, is Muslim. And that comes out to something like 1.3 billion people. But the point is this, that right now, in terms of real committed followers, Muhammad has more committed followers on planet Earth than does Jesus, I'm sorry to say. But the question is, who will win in the end, and how will it all turn out? That's the agenda for the next 20 or 25 minutes. Even though Muhammad died in 632, his influence did not. And what you find afterwards, the next 100 years, Muslim armies marched through North Africa. They came across Gibraltar and they entered into Spain, and their intention was to take all of Europe. They wanted to be able to capture Rome and go into St. Peter's Basilica, as it was in those days, and take up shop and to establish themselves as the religion of Europe. But in 732, there was a huge battle in Europe at the place of Tours, the Valley of Tours, and it is there that they were stopped. What happened was that Charles Martel, king of the Franks, heard about, of course, the Muslim advance and knew that the armies were marching over the mountains, intending to take all of Europe. And so what he did is he called for all the people who were able to fight. The Muslims came in cavalry, and Charles Martel, his troops, were actually on foot soldiers. But thank God they formed a wall. For 7 days, the armies simply looked at each other. No one was willing to begin the fight. But after it began that day in October in 732, what you find is that the Muslim advance was stopped by Charles Martel. And even though the Muslims had conquered Spain, it took Spain nearly 800 years to rid themselves of the Muslim influence and Muslim rule. Nowadays, people forget that the Muslim advance in Europe is going along quite well, thank you. By the way, there were two other times when they tried to conquer Europe, and that was by taking the Habsburgs, as they had hoped, in Vienna in the year 1539 and again in 1681. But thanks to the Viennese there in Vienna, which is where the palaces of the Habsburgs were, the city was able to fend off the Muslim attacks. But today they are taking over Europe. They're spending billions of dollars to infiltrate London and France and Germany, and for that matter, the United States of America. And soon, by sheer numbers, they will be able to democratically actually vote in those whom they wish to rule. But the question that we have to ask today is, who's going to win in the end? Not only over Muhammad, but over Krishna and over all of the other religions of the world. How will it all end? But for a moment, I want you to focus on some of the Muslim gains that have taken place throughout the centuries. A moment ago, I mentioned North Africa. North Africa was the land of Clement and Origen and Tertullian and Athanasius and Augustine, with some strong Christian churches there in Alexandria and elsewhere in Egypt. And the question today is this. Egypt is almost primarily Muslim. The church still exists, but it's not a factor in society. The question that I have to ask is this. Who will eventually rule in Egypt? That's the question. Because what you have is Muhammad and his followers and Allah, and that Allah is a different God than the God Jehovah. They have some attributes that are alike, but if you begin to understand the teaching that is so important to us, you discover that we're talking about a different religion and we are talking about a different God. And the question is, who will eventually rule over Egypt? And then I think of Turkey, and some of us are interested in that question because, God willing, some of us in a few months' time hope to be in Turkey and to visit Istanbul, the Church of Holy Wisdom. And I'm particularly interested because if you go on the Clark Street side of Moody Church and you look at the facade, that part of the church evidently was copied or at least inspired by the Church of Holy Wisdom in Istanbul. The present church today was built by Justinian. Great church built in the years 500 and following. So it's a very, very ancient structure, one of the biggest churches in all of Christendom. And even though the Muslim Turks came against it on two different occasions, God preserved Istanbul, but finally in 1453, the Turks overcame it. They marched into the church. They slaughtered people. And then the church became a Muslim mosque for 500 years. And even though we have some differences with the Orthodox faith did exalt Jesus. And now that church where Jesus was exalted becomes a mosque. If I might say it very plainly, it does not make Jesus look good to think that that church became a mosque. But the question that I want to ask today and answer is, who will eventually rule over Turkey, over Istanbul, and over the Church of Holy Wisdom? And then we think of all of the other countries of Libya and Algeria and Morocco and dozens of others that could be mentioned. And then I think of the city of Jerusalem, the bitterly contested city today, where you have Christians and Jews and Muslims all claiming it as a holy place. And you have violence and wars and terrorism. And I'm not very optimistic about seeing an end to the violence anytime soon. Because the issue that is being settled is this. Did God give promises to Isaac, or did God give promises to Ishmael? That's not to say that all Arabs are descendants of Ishmael. And most assuredly, most Arabs are not. Muslims are not all descendants of Ishmael, to be sure. But it's that question that is being settled today in Jerusalem, and it's being settled by violence and fighting. And then I read on the internet that Muslim law says that once the Muslims have captured a certain area, they have to maintain it for Allah. And so the conflict continues. But I want to know who will eventually rule over Jerusalem. Who will win in the end? That's what I'm after today in this sermon. Now, I want you to take your Bibles and turn to Psalm 22 today. Psalm 22 is a passage that is frequently quoted when we think of Jesus and the crucifixion. Psalm 22 begins with the words of Jesus from the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? The cry of Jesus in his distress. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? But I want you to know that it not only talks about Jesus Christ's relationship to God, but Jesus Christ's relationship to his enemies. If we had time, we could read the entire psalm. But notice in verse 6, "But I am a worm and not a man, scorned by mankind and despised by all the people. All who see me mock me. They make mouths at me. They wag their heads. He trusted in the Lord. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue him, for he delights in him." Can't you just see it? That's exactly what was said when Jesus was being crucified. "If you're the Son of God, well then come down from the cross," right? All of this predicted hundreds of years before through the experience of David here in this remarkable psalm. Something else that we can really see here under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit is that the Jewish method of capital punishment was always stoning. And yet, if you read the text carefully, what we have here is a description of crucifixion. For example, it says in verse 16, "For dogs encompassed me, a company of evildoers encircles me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots." Notice the phrase that I read perhaps too quickly. "They have pierced my hands and my feet." That's crucifixion. That's not stoning. Predicted hundreds of years before Jesus arrives on the scene. Well, it's a psalm of despair because in this psalm it appears as if Jesus is losing. He's cut off from the Father. He's despised by people. He's crucified. And it seems as if it is the end of a very beautiful life. This is Pastor Lutzer. Well, aren't you glad that even though Psalm 22 is a psalm that is so filled with sorrow and apparent hopelessness, it is that psalm that ends with the triumph of Jesus Christ. That's why I've entitled the message that you are listening to, "The Triumph of the Gospel." Because on one hand, as you read the psalm, you can see all of this apparent defeat. I say apparent defeat because obviously, Jesus was not defeated in any way, but it appears so hopeless. The crucifixion is taking place, and yet the psalm ends with incredible triumph. And you know, in a manner of speaking, that's the way our lives are too, aren't they? Oftentimes, despair and hopelessness, times when our enemies seem to be getting the best of us and when we don't know where to turn, and when the pain is excruciating and it is great. And yet at the same time, that's not the full story, is it? There's also a message of triumph and hope, because we believe in another world, and whether that triumph takes place here or whether it takes place in the world to come, we are, after all, hopeful people. Someone has well said that no one who believes in God need be pessimistic, because we know that the outcome is going to be victorious and it is going to be certain. I invite you today to trust the Jesus of the cross so that you can participate with the Jesus of the crown.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer with part one of The Triumph of the Gospel, a missions conference message highlighting the ultimate victory of God's purposes. Monday, more amazing predictions from Psalm 22. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. Today's message can be yours on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us for the Monday edition of Running to Win.